The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Autoria, Source Elements, and RSPE Audio Solutions.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast. I'm Julian Rogers, and in this week's edition, I'm joined by James Richmond and Steve DeMott. James Richmond is an Oxfordshire-based producer, engineer, and multi-instrumentalist. He's worked for Solid State Logic and has written for a number of Australian publications since the 1990s. Previously, he was an IT networking consultant. Welcome, James.
Hi, folks. How are we all?
And Steve DeMott is a Connecticut-based audio engineer, producer, and multi-instrumentalist. He studied songwriting and music production and engineering at Berklee College of Music in Boston, and has been recording professionally for over 20 years and has worked on projects for Sennheiser, Ubisoft, and Microsoft Studios. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And today, unsurprisingly, considering it dropped last night, we're going to discuss Pro Tools 2021.6. This was a massive update, actually, I have to say. It's dominated my week and it's all terribly exciting. But now the cat's thoroughly out of the bag, we can talk about it in the open. So here we are. I think we should start at the top with the bit that's most known about. Get that out of the way because it's huge. But we've known about it for a few weeks because very unusually Avid were very open about what was coming. The HDX hybrid engine. I've been using this for a little while because I have a Pro Tools Carbon. It's one of those things that's massive, but it's kind of like a little bit. There's not a huge amount to say about on the Carbon just because it's a green button that makes things brilliant. But that's come to HDX. So the HDX hybrid engine, better performance, near zero latency, and a massively increased voice count. We have, well, James, you're an HDX user.
Yeah.
Steve, I think you're not. Is that right?
I'm not. I'm kind of been looking at the Carbon, but I don't want to give up my converters. In my metric halos, they're so incredible.
Of course, yeah, you're very metric halo indeed. Okay, so in that case, I think we should start with James. James, have you tried it? What are your thoughts? How is the changes, particularly in voice count, I suppose, going to affect your workflow? What do you got to say about it?
Yeah, well, there was an article that went up a couple of weeks ago in anticipation of this update. I'm not a beta tester. I've not been able to get hands on with this until it dropped yesterday. It's all good for me. You know, it's entirely a positive thing because I'm a HDX1 user with an Avid Matrix and, you know, a fairly expanded Avid Matrix over Dante. You know, I have a lot of channels, many more channels than the 32 channel limit that was a part of. I guess we'll get to that in a bit. If I just wanted to use the native version, the problem I had was with HDX1 and the number of voices that you had previously, I'd regularly run out of DSP, run out of voices, run out of DSP. It was happening all the time, and so I think I'd mentioned in one of our discussions that it felt, rather than owning a Formula One car, it was a little bit like having a very expensive milk float. It just felt as though it was hampered in some way. And so, yeah, so the hybrid engine's been great for me. I'm not even 24 hours into using it. And really, I've only had a chance to play around with it. But it's clearly a much better way of going for those of us with HDX1. I may have to add another HDX card at some point because I've now got more than 64 channels in the studio. And I'm never recording that many channels at once, but what I quite like to be able to do is have all of the inputs potentially there live to just enable and record without having to patch. Currently, I still have to do a bit of patching. I guess for me, it's been an entirely positive thing, I can't wait to get you using it a little bit more.
So, James, I mean, you were referring to, I know something about your setup and an awful lot of your IOs coming over Dante, and you're referring to patching. This would be software patching in Dante Controller, would it, to access all of your outboard?
Yeah, so because of the way the studio is set up, because it's essentially a one-room studio, I do have everything on analog patch bays, but Well, I have most things on analog patch bays, except for one area of the studio, which has the modular synth and some synthesizers, where I've got a Dante converter over that side. That's not patchable over analog, but everything else is, particularly the outboard. Because, you know, the thing with Dante, the last thing you want to be doing is trying to create hardware chains, taking into account the analog to digital latency of, you know, doing conversion in and out all the time. So the analog patch bays are still there. And I think, you know, Dante solves a lot of problems. What it doesn't solve is, say, I've got a massive passive here and a distressor and, you know, another piece of gear, for example, and I want to create a series chain of those three things. Well, if you do that in Dante, you're going to be going through an analog to digital conversion three times. Well, six times, really. Analog to digital, analog three times. And that introduces a lot of latency. So some stuff I want to be able to patch live into Pro Tools going direct. And sometimes I want to be able to patch it through an analog chain. So that's why the analog patch bays are still here. But I've made a choice about what I need to patch in the real world and in the analog world and what I need to be able to patch.
Got you. So it's in terms of efficiency, and that kind of links in really to a lot of the thinking behind the hybrid engine itself. We should bring Steve in though. So Steve, you're not an HDX user. James is clearly very well positioned to benefit from this a lot because he's an HDX One user, who are the people in the HDX users who are seeing the biggest benefit. So you're native, but how's this update going to benefit your studio and your particular way of working?
Well, moving on a little bit from just the hybrid engine, increased I/O and increased voices are huge. Hmm. I also like James, I didn't have early access. I downloaded 2021.6 yesterday and proceeded to finish a mix on it.
It was
very brave. I was in the middle of a project. I was like, I'm going to go for broke here. Wow. I had my 2020 dot, whatever it is, 12 still. That's by the last version I was using. I hadn't gone to 2021.3 yet. So I did that. And a couple of things that I noticed almost instantly is my CPU load is lower.
Hmm.
I did have a couple nits with a particular plugin that kept getting reported as not being able to handle I/O fast enough.
Oh, really? Which plugin was that?
It was the Lindell 354, sort of the multi-band version of the...
Oh, that's brilliant. I love that. Yeah, I know the one.
Yeah, the multi-band version of the Neve diode bridge.
Who knows? I mean, that's one instance, so that could be your
it
system
could have been a reboot
specific.
That all I needed.
Yeah,
I could have just needed a reboot. You never know with this, you know, nine times out of 10 you reboot and everything's fine.
Yeah, or sometimes a plugin update can make a big difference as well.
That too. But everything else from them, you know, like I had the that was a Lindell, and I had the Lindell 50 on every track, and that was working fine.
Sure. So you're seeing these kind of efficiency gains in terms of just, well, people are using the word snappiness. I haven't actually, because I mean I've installed it and I've run it up, but I haven't used it in anger yet. It's literally this morning. Does this work? Yes, it does. And then on with other things.
So. Well, it definitely shows that they are tweaking the engine and taking advantage. I see it as. I at one point was a developer, so I look at these things and I say, so they're definitely taking into account the power that's available in native.
And
using it to increase what Pro Tools can do, because let's be honest, for the past maybe even 10 years, the biggest holdback for Pro Tools has been the DSP hardware. It was not quite as powerful as native. And every year, you know, Intel was getting faster chips and more powerful chips. And the gap grew and grew to, I think at this point, they finally had to throw their hands up and say, we need to leverage this.
I don't disagree with what you're saying, but the thing historically that's been an issue is that the largely, not completely, but largely the choice between using native or DSP processing in a Pro Tools DSP system has been kind of like an either-or choice. The two haven't played nicely together. And right. while you can mix DSP and native processing on an HDX system, it's not great. It can waste your system resources quite
well
badly.
And it was, and this was the problem that I was having with a 2019 Mac Pro, which is an absolute beast of a machine. I've had absolutely no problems, particularly in Logic. It's been flawless. I've got more power than I could ever hope to use. You know, there's oodles of RAM, loads of storage. It's been brilliant, except when you're using it with the old version of HDX, because you would run out of voices. And if you try and solve the problem by using a mixture of DSP plugins and native plugins, then you've got even more voices being chewed up, and you know, that was the real problem. Now it's all that problem, all of those problems have gone. It's brilliant, and I'm back in love with using Pro Tools again. It's really fantastic.
There's a lovely story that I believe to be true. I'm pretty sure it came out of our interview with when Francois first discussed and revealed that the hybrid engine was coming to HDX quite a while ago. And as far as I understand it, the hybrid engine was conceived as a way to make the limited DSP available in Carbon work nicely in a native-based system, so you could have this hybrid system. Mm. And it was only after they'd done it and they had something of a eureka moment and realised, hey, wait a minute, we could use this on all DSP-based systems. How would it work on HDX? And when they tried it, they were more than a little surprised, as far as I understand, of just how well it worked. Something of a eureka moment. And it's kind of... I absolutely wouldn't hold that up as any kind of a criticism. It's agility, you know. It's like, what if? Wow, that works. Let's go with that. And you know, pretty quickly, we've managed to completely rejuvenate a whole generation of hardware that's been sitting there with people who've invested a lot of money in it, going, oh, is this a good place to be?
Yeah, and that's what I meant about
10
the
years. Your HDX One system, sweet, you know. It's like,
exactly, and that's what I felt. You know, having the expensive milk float, like this is a high end solution. It should be better than it is. And you know, in 2011 when HDX came out, this is a 10-year-old piece of hardware. It's extremely unusual for a 10-year-old piece of hardware to still be at the pinnacle of audio production technology. It's kind of unheard of. So I'm serious. Impressed, and you know, I'm not always on Team Avid when it comes to some of the choices they make. I've found the 32 track limit a real problem, and it's what's kept me in HDX for so long. But in this, you know, credit where credit is due, they've knocked it out of the park in my estimation.
Agreed. So what I think is, I mean, considering the number of HDX 2 and HDX 3 systems that are just frankly going to be more powerful than they need to be. I can't help wondering whether there's going to be quite a few secondhand HDX cards floating around as people realise that they just don't need them anymore.
Okay, so that's always going to be the people who have more than a single HDX card. It's going to be for more I/O, and I'm one of those people. Like I can see myself getting another HDX card, not because I need the power of the DSP, but simply because Pro Tools, I need to be able to, I would like to be able to call up more than 64 inputs at one time. Just having all of those channels there live, it's kind of worth the, what is it, $3,000 for an HDX card?
It is a real pity that you can't mix and match HD native and HDX cards in the same system. I understand that you can't.
Yeah, no, you can't.
But it's that'd be great. But, you know, I mean, if there was a glut coming to the second-hand market, is this something that you'd consider? Actually, you wouldn't, because you want to keep your Metric Halo systems, don't you, Steve?
I might consider it if I could. I don't know. See, ever since the announcement of the hybrid engine, I've been waffling. And thinking, I even went so far as to price out home mix room, not at the studio itself, but in my little mix room at home, I have a iMac Pro. Mm. So I went out and I priced a PCIe expansion chassis and an HDX card and all of that, and I've been seriously looking at it, saying, well. There's a pull here.
Yeah.
I see benefit now where I didn't before. I remember when I made the decision to go all native, it was not shortly after, but I'd got to the point where I had to either abandon my TDM system or move over to HD. And I can't remember how long ago that was.
That was
a while back.
If you're talking about when HDX came out, it's 2011, I think. I'm pretty sure that
I think
it's just about the last TDM system in the world.
But Steve, you're talking about going from TDM to HD. That would have been 2003, 2004, something like that, wouldn't it?
Oh, no, I think he means HDX, don't you?
But HDX, yeah.
Oh, right, okay, sorry. I thought you were saying TDM to HD, right.
Yeah, so it was... That's when I realized that I had more power natively than I had in my TDM system.
And how can I make that work so that I can, yeah.
Yeah, and I had been going between Pro Tools and Digital Performer for different projects. And, you know, quite honestly, Digital Performer was smoking Pro Tools.
I had the same experience. I went for an Apogee Symphony system after having an HD system, didn't go HDX, and did that for, you know, a number of years, and it worked very well. But I got dragged back into HDX simply because getting under 1 millisecond latency was useful for certain projects. That's what dragged me back.
Right, and I've had that with my interfaces since the, you know, since I went native. I mean, so that was not a big deal to me because I had, you know, I had that under a millisecond latency for foldback. So that wasn't a big deal for me. But now I'm looking at it and I'm seeing the increased power and efficiency, and that appeals to me.
Achoria has a wide selection of software effects, including 3 compressors, 3 filters, 3 preamps, and 3 delays you'll actually use. The latest release, 3 delays you'll actually use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects, called the AudioFuse Creative Suite, is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Visit Achoria.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use.
And the single mixer thing is a big deal to me. Like I've got a UA system that I was using in my other room when I was in Geneva pre-pandemic. And I like the UA system. I think it's fantastic. Going between 2 different mixers all the time is a pain. And the great thing with, you know, the hybrid engine is you can stay in the mix and edit windows 100% of the time. It's brilliant for that.
I know, Julian, you have the Carbon, correct?
Exactly. I mean, what I was going to say is, I mean, I don't know what your IO requirements are. Something to keep in mind about Carbon is that it is a closed system. You can't daisy chain units or anything. It'd be amazing if they did, but I'm not expecting that to happen.
But it's AVB, right?
They have targeted it quite carefully. It's AVB, it's Mac only.
I wonder if there'll be an expansion coming for it at some point, though.
I mean, I don't know, but I just think that'd eat into the HD stuff. So it just depends, you know, exactly where they see the relative merits of each. But what they've done is they've very carefully thought about the amount of I/O and DSP in there, so that for the kind of stuff that I might find myself doing. I mean, I love it because for the kind of thing that I do, I don't have a studio as such. I have a room I refer to as my studio, but recording doesn't happen in here beyond a VO. If I'm tracking a band, I take gear out and I go to them, and I have done for years and years and years. And it's a way I really like working. And this just does it. It really does. You know, if it had, I don't know, I'd probably find on a typical thing, I'd end up needing more than 4 headphone outs. But not necessarily more than 4 discrete mixes. I think I could make it work with fewer and taking a headphone amp out, and that's just it, you know.
Coming back to your converter, you know, you really like the Metric Halo stuff, there, Steve. Yeah. Have you tried other modern converters other than the Metric Halos for a while? Like, do you? I know you're very tied to the Metric Halo thing, and you know, I think they're fantastic too. I also was very tied to my Symphony system until I heard a Matrix.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've tried the Apogee, Lavery.
Right. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. All very nice. And at some point, you know, you're splitting hairs, and it's not so much a question of better, but a question of preference.
Right. And is it the the converter quality, or is it sort of the whole interface, the way in which you engage with the hardware, the way in which the well, way Metric Halo do things rather than just the converter quality?
Yeah, exactly. It's not just the converter quality. I've yet to find an interface that has the flexibility of routing that these have.
Oh, okay.
It's insanely flexible. And to be able to build my own DSP on board when I need something special, it's so there's a lot of advantages that I take advantage of. I mean, it's just crazy what they put into these boxes.
It's true. The piece that was it Nathaniel? I think it was Nathaniel wrote a piece about
about
building an Atmos system using Metric Halo hardware, and I really didn't know exactly how deep you could go on those interfaces till I read that, and I went, wow, these things are yeah. So now there's an awful lot there. I'm going to kind of pull us onto another subject, just because we're going to end up not talking about quite a few things that have happened in the last 24 hours if we don't. So we've referred to increased I/O. So in that case, the thing that's been such a moan for so many native users for a long time is the 32 I/O limit. That has been doubled to 64 I/O in Pro Tools standard, let's call it. That's for me. I certainly think that that 64 pushes things. I don't know. I mean, 32. I can use all of if I'm being a little bit lavish or generous or trying to incorporate outboard, or certainly if you're trying to do anything involving a mixer. 64 is a much bigger margin of error on how much I/O you need. That's very much going to affect you, Steve, more than it is James. How do you feel about that one then?
Well, it's definitely a step in the right direction. I mean, we were...
That's qualified.
I'm going to complain, right? I'm going to complain. I told you that yesterday.
Yeah.
I 64, I mean, being realistic, am I going to track with more than 64 ins? I think the most I've done is somewhere in the 50s. So probably
it's going to be getting tight in your place for 64 players. So you're going to be doubling up on some stuff.
Yeah. Well, that was in a room for, with an orchestra and spot mics everywhere.
So you've gone pretty much Yukon and S1s and stuff, and I don't know to what extent your console's like a laptop stand now, but is that still in commission? Is that still plumbed? Is that going to kind of maybe get looked at again?
The console is still hooked up. It's really an S1 stand now, but it's still hooked up. The console has to stay hooked up because we have tape.
Yeah, okay.
So. So there's no way around that. It's not like I can, you know, mix through the S1s on the Otari. So,
Very good. Just, very good point. Okay.
And do you have outboard that is running as hardware inserts in Pro Tools, or is that all done on the console? Or
we do that through the console.
That's all through
the console. So I bus out to the console, and then I can bring in my outboard that way. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so in that case, I'm just 64 I/O. So that's input and outputs. So in that case, it's inputs that's making you happy having 64 inputs, or are the outputs as important or more important? Well, I mean, both of you really, but Steve first.
Both are, I think it's both important. I mean, from a tracking standpoint, 32 always felt like, what really didn't bother me about it is if I really needed to, I can track either right in the Metric Halo record panel or in Digital Performer. And, you know, when I had to do huge sessions, I'd do Digital Performer and do 50 plus inputs. Yeah. But what I see it as, I see this as, and this is more philosophical than, you know, boots on the ground kind of thing, is Avid realizing that the sort of philosophy of intentionally crippling was hurting their market share.
Maybe. I mean, I have to say, I remember my first Pro Tools system was a 001 all those years ago.
Yes.
And the limitation that hit me before anything else was, back in those days, you were on 16 buses. And that I used to max out every session. I mean, they just couldn't do anything with 16 buses. Right. I.O. actually, I mean, I did a surprising amount with just a 001. But when I'd managed to capture and squeeze in those things and submix on the way in through an analog mixer and all those kind of things that you do when your I.O. is restricted. And it's not that much of a leap in those days when you're kind of used to, you know, if you've come from an 8-track analog tape machine, then kind of, you know, having all these inputs are like, wow, you know, I've actually got quite a lot. But as soon as you're in there, you just eat up those buses. So, you know what I mean? It's kind of like...
Oh, yeah, yeah. When I had a 001 at the house when I had a different studio where we had Pro Tools TDM system, and I grabbed it so that I can have something at home just to bring a project home. Mm. And I ran into that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's funny how quickly you forget. So,
you come from, I mean, before that I was using ADATs. So,
yeah.
Wow. You know, it's like you learn, you had those skills to get around that stuff.
So James, in terms of IO limitations, I mean, you that particular IO limitation doesn't bother you because it doesn't affect you, but you have your own IO limitations. If you were going to say which is more important, I'm guessing that you're both IO in and out because you're using it for incorporating hardware and round tripping.
Kind of. So if I describe how I used to work before I had all of these channels. Basically, I had all of my inputs on the analog patch bays, and I used to have a 16 input HD rig with a 96 IO, and I'd basically use the analog patch bay to patch into one of the 16 available inputs. Usually, it's me recording myself. As I got more gear and more inputs, it allowed me to half normal the patch bays. So then I just had channels, the most used channels, live all the time. And then when I got into Dante, it's like, well, you know what? I've got 64 channels here. I've got around 64 inputs. So I'll just have all of my inputs live all of the time. And then I can call it up in Pro Tools, you know, define it and label it in the Pro Tools IO. So actually I've got many more inputs because I've got synthesizers and, you know, there's like 40 of them here. And they're all on Jasper's stands. They're patched in for MIDI, for audio over Dante. And I like to have those to be able to be called up at any point without having to patch, and I can do that. And then I've got 32 channels of analog outboard. Yeah, that adds up to slightly more than 64 channels. So for me the problem beyond 64 channels, I've got a RedNet PCIe card I use for Logic, and all of my inputs get split off both to the DigiLink and to the RedNet PCI card. And so I can call up all of those inputs at once. The thing is that even with this update, Pro Tools Native still can't do as many inputs as Logic can. You know what I mean? Like I've got 128 channels for no reason, as far as I can see it. So I agree with Steve. There's no reason why Avid couldn't say, listen, if you want to have 128 channels of input natively, on your head be it. And I know that I believe their opinion is, well, by limiting it, it makes the performance more deterministic. But actually, it should be really down to me as to how risky I'm going to be with my I.O., considering I don't need to have all of those channels up at once. This is mostly a workflow issue. Right. The issue that I have with my HDX and Matrix with the DigiLink connection is, you know, I've got one HDX card. If I want to go up to 64 channels, I've got to buy an HDX card. That's $3,000. Pounds, and then I've got to buy a DigiLink card for the Matrix. That's another $2,000. So I've got to spend $5,000 for Pro Tools HDX to do what I can actually do with Logic and an 800-pound PCIe card. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that irritates. I'm not going to go and spend $5,000.
Understandably irritated. Yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah. And is it the end of the world? No, because actually I work both in Logic and in Pro Tools. I've worked around it, and the hybrid engine has made things a lot easier for me to work around the limitations I had with HDX. It doesn't fix everything that I've got in the studio, and I will continue to use Logic kind of mostly because I use it. I'm quicker with Logic. I've used it for more than 30 years. I've used Pro Tools on and off for 30 years, but I'm more of a Logic guy. When I need HDX, I really, really need it. And the $3,000 investment I've got in the HDX card is worth it for that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? For me to spend another $5,000 to get up, to get the same functionality I already have in Logic, you know what? Or Avid, you could just give us 128 channels and then I could get rid of my HDX card.
The Production Expert Podcast is made possible using Source Connect Now from Source Elements, the free way to record high-quality audio over the internet. Need to record an interview or a podcast like this one remotely? With Source Connect Now, you can. Using a Chrome browser, you'll get ISDN-equivalent quality audio without the need to install any additional software. Register for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
But what I'm gonna do instead is I think we've got to at least refer to increased track count and default voices, and that's quite an interesting thing of a simplification of the situation as goes some tracks and voices for non-HDX systems of just 256 tracks. There you go, and you don't need to worry about is that double for stereo. It's just 256 of anything, whatever.
Great.
They're brilliant. Just trying to get you to not have to have to think about voices. Couldn't be more different for HDX because you've got 2048 and the traditional thing of like, and that gets divided down by two for stereo and six for 5.1 and yada, yada, yada. But basically, 2048 is a hell of a lot. I think we'll leave it at that because I want to talk about M1 support. So this is great for anybody who's had an upgrade in their hardware forced on them by failure, which is the thing that makes people very nervous if they're heavily invested in a Pro Tools workflow and they can't run Pro Tools on whatever Mac they'd have to buy if their Mac exploded. But are either of you using an M1 Mac for anything?
I bought one and then I returned it. I had the 13-inch MacBook Pro and it was great. The problem is I'm nearly 50 and my eyes don't work. So I couldn't see the screen unless I had to scale it. I just couldn't read the screen unless I scaled it. So unfortunately that had to go back. So it doesn't affect me directly, but you know, it's a great move in the right direction. Brilliant. Great.
So in that case, if we see some new machines.
Oh yeah. As soon as there is a 16-inch MacBook Pro, I'm jumping on that for my portable. Absolutely.
Gotcha.
And all the rumors are saying September for the M1X.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we thought it might have happened at WWDC. It didn't. And I understand with everything that's going on with the pandemic that, you know, why supply chains might be constrained, assuming that is the reason. But yeah, September, great, brilliant. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I've been holding off. Well, I originally, when the M1 was announced, I was at the point where I needed to upgrade. So I bought this iMac Pro as a stopgap, knowing that it was going to be powerful enough to get me through the next couple of years while Avid figured out the whole Apple Silicon thing.
You can't wait for the next machine because there's always a next machine. So yeah, there comes a point where you have to go, actually, I need a computer. How recent, what machine is that? The iMac is?
iMac Pro.
Oh, an iMac Pro. So the dark gray.
With the server grade CPU.
That's a beast of a machine, isn't it?
So. It's a beast. I didn't want to do it because I don't really like the iMac form factor.
Mm.
Combining the CPU with the screen, I was like, well, you know, then you have this great screen that you throw away later.
Exactly. Having taken an iMac to a recycling center, it's
heartbreaking.
But I had to do it, and I'm very happy with it. But with this, I will say, I need to upgrade my mobile system, which is a laptop, and I'm definitely going to do the one of the new ones.
So why not the Mac Pro Tower? Was that just down to cost relative to what you get? You know, I think the base model Mac Pro and the iMac Pro are around the same cost. You don't get the screen, obviously.
You know what it was? This was going to be a stopgap.
Mm.
And I knew it was a stopgap, and then this will be a hand-me-down for my son or something like that who does 3D rendering. So,
oh, wow, yeah, lucky son.
Yeah. So that's really why. It was because this was a stopgap, and I wasn't going to outfit a whole Mac Pro.
And if you're not dealing with HDX, then you don't need PCI cards per se.
Exactly, that wasn't a selling point for me.
Yeah.
So I
got back into the Mac Pro Tower because I'd been dealing with expansion chassis and the noise of the expansion chassis was just too great, really. So
yeah, no, I completely understand that. Yeah. So, but I will say I am really surprised that they've pulled M1 support out this quickly.
I guess it is with Rosetta, isn't it? It's not like
it is still
they've
with
done
Rosetta.
The native. Yeah. If I would be very surprised if they'd been able to completely rebuild Pro Tools from the ground up with native M1 support. Rosetta 2 feels like it's, maybe it's still a bit early, but welcome. Certainly.
Support is support. And it's that whole thing about for native, everything has to be. And I mean, like in your world, James, say you'd need Dabman.
Oh, I'd need everything.
You know, is that kind of thing about kind of everything needs to be ready at the same time? So,
so
very
things
prudent,
like,
just to put in, look, hardware supported.
What would I really need? Most of the plugins, I'd need Yukon, I'd need Dadman, and I'd need the Eventide H9000 remote, emote software as well.
But any one of those things would be a
deal breaker.
Absolutely. Yeah. Gotcha. Actually, talking about deal breakers, right, I want to move on to this because, I mean, I might be in a minority here and I might have sort of the internet shouting at me going, are you crazy? Blah, blah, blah. But delay compensation on sidechains is now available. It has been available on HDX, although I've never tried it. I'm not an HDX user. Some people say it doesn't work on HDX. I don't know about that at all. I can't comment.
But it does, but it's a pain to configure because you have to configure everything in the I/O section, and it's done in in milliseconds. Would be nice if, and I've said this on the podcast previously, in the I/O plugin in Logic has a ping function where it can determine for you how many samples the delay is.
Yeah, there's a similar thing in Studio One. Something is called.
And I've been shouting on the duck for ages that Pro Tools really needs that. And I know that Avid are looking at it.
Okay.
They're looking at it.
Well, delay compensation is now available for native users. I've never been, it's never been an issue for me, a lack of delay compensation on external sidechains. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's just that I don't really do that. I mean, I'm not a heavy sidechain user anyway. But is this a change that's been some kind of deal breaker for you until it became available? I mean, I suppose you don't like the way it's done in HDX. You're not an HDX, James. You're not an HDX user anyway, Steve. So I mean, delay compensation on sidechains, big deal for you?
Not really.
Good. I'm glad someone else thinks so. but if you read online stuff, it sounds like the biggest deal in the world. And I'm sure those people are making those comments. It bugs them a lot, but it's never bothered me ever. So, you know, but it's available now. And
I've never noticed it to be a problem on my sidechains. I my sidechains tend to be, I'm sidechaining my kick to my bass.
And it's not that timing critical. If you're running two audio paths, identical audio paths together, and they're comb filtering against each other, sure, that stuff
then
matters a lot.
Then you'd have a problem. But you know,
but the whole point is you're not hearing the external sidechain in with the
exactly. Know. If I'm ducking a bass with a kick drum, it that doesn't matter. If I'm ducking the overheads with the snare, it doesn't matter.
The kind of place I'll use it is things like ducking reverbs and stuff like that.
Or ducking reverbs with
and
the lead
that's
vocals.
Just like it's not that timing critical. But yeah, it depends what you're doing. I'm sure for some people it makes a difference. But it's something that's always kind of, it has confused me a little, I have to say. There's another one that came up actually, which I'm trying to sort of figure out the how much of a big deal it is. And that's that, and I'd noticed this on the Carbon, it's the case on the Carbon as well, but Heat's not available in DSP. Now, considering Heat started off as being HDX only, but
it's an odd move.
I don't know if the processing happened on the DSP or not. I'm not totally sure about that. I mean, certainly on I used it on TDM systems, but then if the whole idea of the hybrid approach is that you only access DSP while you're tracking, then it needs to be in native. But it's been available in native for a long time. So in for Ultimate, and it's this whole thing about what's HDX and what's Ultimate, because it was one of those things that was in a bit of a grey area for a little while. But I've had Heat for years, and I don't have HDX.
Yeah, but, so this does, I guess it's emblematic of a bit of a trend. Like if you think of Sonics are a company that they released their Drumgate plugin, and that's a native only plugin. So I think a few developers, you know, maybe they're just running the numbers.
Yeah, not Avid though.
But and this was about to be my point. for Avid to acknowledge that, well, actually, most people are running natively and the HDX users may seem a little bit like this odd, you know, historical tribe of users. It's an interesting admission.
How about it? See, I look at that, like I said, at one time in a previous life, I was a developer. And I look at that and I say, somebody had to look at that. And in the process of the hybrid engine and optimizing things, I think, and I have nothing to gauge this on other than having been in meetings like this, somebody said, you know, it's just far more efficient if we keep it native.
Yeah.
Is it an either or choice though? Just because, I mean...
Well, is it a permanent decision?
Is it a problem
is the other
if it's
question.
Running in both? Actually, this is what it must be. Is it must be that it that for some reason it's better or more convenient or something?
It's just giving resource management for you know the coding teams. Like it takes twice as many resources to produce two versions of a thing.
Right,
but it wouldn't be running on both of them at the same time. I don't know. I mean, I think none of us know the answer to this, so we probably shouldn't speculate.
Know. And the other thing is, well, far be it from me to speculate, but do we know that this is it's never going to appear.
I mean, for DSP. Is it that philosophically the idea being that look, if you're running your mix natively, then you need heat available for your kind of like mixer emulation,
and then
that's where it belongs. And if you're dropping individual tracks or groups of tracks out for low latency while tracking, does it matter if heat isn't appearing on it? It's not a kind of, you know.
Not mission critical.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I've spoken to someone this morning who's not at all happy that it's not there, and and has gone back to the roll back to the old version because they want it for where they are.
That's a curious choice. Like, no disrespect to that person, but I'm not sure I would not use the hybrid engine simply because I couldn't have heat on the channels for the time that I'm tracking. You know, like
who knows? It's an interesting one, and it's one that I wasn't really aware of. I mean, there's some other bits and bobs. I mean, I've been having a play with the improvements to the customization, the user interface customization.
Mm. I may actually switch to dark mode because of this.
Weren't already? Okay.
I did not like it.
I didn't begin with, but I got so used to it just because I was using it. Actually, as a visual cue for people on the site creating content to go, look, this is the new version. And it's like,
Right.
That's the only reason I did it, but it's amazing how quickly I got used to it.
You don't find it a little difficult to see?
Yes, I found it incredibly difficult to see. And then I got used to it. And now I don't. It's like,
yeah.
Push through with it. But you don't have to now anyway, just because they've done so much on the. The customization of the UI, loads of stuff that you can tweak.
I took a quick look at that yesterday. Like I said, I was actually working. I pulled up the new Pro Tools to finish a mix, so I didn't want to.
Well, it made me realize that there's not actually many things that I'd actually choose to change at the moment. I came up with two, and I made a preset and went, actually, that's useful to me. And the two things that I changed were you can lighten the toolbar at the top in dark mode from like dark to kind of like a lighter gray. And I just visually quite liked it. And the other thing I did was I pulled back the intensity of the marker lines. You know, if you drop a marker on the timeline, you get that yellow line goes right down the edit window. And I've always thought that they were like a little bit too attention grabbing. It's like, that's not as significant as these. So I just pulled it back slightly and that's it at the moment.
Okay.
I'm a bit of a traditionalist, I think. I've just kept, you know, the classic light version. And I'm the same with macOS. I don't go into dark mode for anything. Well,
I've always thought that's to do with saving battery on a laptop, personally. But
oh, yeah, possibly.
I always thought so. But
It's nice to see tab to transient working again, I have to say. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was troublesome.
Okay. I think that we should maybe we've at least referred to everything in this. What is a really big update? I'm extremely happy with it. I mean, is that consensus? Has anyone got any grumbles? Are we kind of giving it a thumbs up?
Definitely. I see it as Avid kind of recognizing the lay of the land has changed, and taking steps to just really make Pro Tools a huge contender again. Because I know Logic is probably their biggest threat.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, it's certainly, I mean, I've gone from a position of not knowing anybody who's running Logic in a Pro Studio to knowing some people who are running Logic in a Pro Studio. Now,
and that alone says something.
If that's just because I know different people or because more people are doing it, I don't know. So, yeah.
Yeah, Logic's really, you know, for me, it's what I started with when I was working in a guitar shop in the 90s in Bondi, Australia, and it happened to be the one that was being sold there. When I was working in the high tech section, we had training in Logic. So that's how I learned Logic. For me, it had nothing to do with all of the recording studios in the area were using Pro Tools. I just happened to get exposed to Logic first. So I've used it consistently through my whole, playing and recording career. Pro Tools for me, you know, once I lived in the States for a bit and there was literally nothing else. No one was using Logic. You know, this was in the eMagic days. I sort of think the guys that are using Pro Tools that have to use Pro Tools, we're always going to keep using it. What is the market shift that's happening? It's not happening in the Dolby Atmos post-production areas. That still seems to mostly be Pro Tools and a little bit of Nuendo. So are we talking about hobbyists into professional, you know, one-man band type recording people? You know, is that where the market share is being lost?
Yeah.
It's a while
since... This is our big topic.
It's a while since I taught, but when I was teaching... the kids were not interested in Pro Tools. Pro Tools was a thing I had to kind of like push them towards. And as soon as I stopped pushing, they ran away from it back to Logic. And it was, and there was a bit of a peer thing. I mean, certainly it depends who you are and what you're doing, but Logic certainly seemed to have a sort of an aspirational status amongst young producers.
I think also it's the licensing thing, you know, iLocks, even, you know, for a long time, having to put an iLock on your laptop, you know, that just wasn't good when you're sitting in a Starbucks.
There are lots of arguments around that, and that's let's not go there because we really don't have time. But
overall, yes, this is a huge thumbs up. I mean, Avid has knocked it out of the park, in my opinion.
Okay, James.
Categorically, it's been a fantastic update. It does feel like it's been a long time coming, and it's, you know, I'm not going to castigate Avid for being a little bit late with it. I'd like to see the native limit IO removed completely, not limited at all. But the hybrid engine, there is nothing that I've so far in 24 hours of using it, less than 24 hours of using it, seen that that's a problem. It's
so, so in terms of direction of travel, they're spot on.
So I think
the only reservation you've got is how far they've gone in how much time. But okay, sure.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm returning back to my original point of like, yeah, I think it's great. I was really excited when I heard the details. And the thing that I actually liked was that it felt to me that there was something in it for everyone. HDX users have, you know, it's birthday and Christmas. I mean, seriously. But the native users haven't been forgotten, and that IO limit thing I thought was potentially the biggest news in terms of the number of people it was going to affect. But you know, maybe that just says more about my use of Pro Tools. But yeah, there we are. We should move on to Find of the Week.
RSPE Audio Solutions design, sell, and install professional audio and video equipment. Their team are available by phone, live chat, or email to receive and process orders. They have everything you need to build or upgrade your home studio to ensure you can continue to work from home. If there is anything they can do to help, reach out or shop online at rspeaudio.com.
So, James, what's your find of the week?
Well, for me, it's my recently arrived Eventide H9000 with the Dante card installed. I'd had access to H3000s years ago, had never really been able to justify the expense of an H9000, and then, you know, now have been. The Dante card is fantastic for that. And it's particularly the Dante card I want to talk about. Because the H9000 is essentially a computer or four computers, it generates a little bit of fan noise. And the great thing about the Dante card is I can just put it on the network. It's sitting in another room to me at the moment and not making any acoustic noise in the studio. But, you know, other than the Dante card, it's a complete beast. I've never had so much processing available from a hardware unit, and it sounds fantastic. And it drags and drops like plugins within Pro Tools or within Logic. It's just fantastic. I feel like I've achieved something simply by owning this piece of hardware. I know that sounds weird, but that's how I feel.
But feel is the word, isn't it? Just because, I mean, like we were talking about converters, and there's more to it than just the sound, because, you know, kind of like converters, bad converters are kind of hard to find. Slightly better than other converters, yes, but you can spend a lot of time down there. But ultimately, it's about seeing your converters and going, I feel pleased and safe and warm and fuzzy that that's over there because I trust it. And in the same way, if you're doing a pretty straightforward effect with your H9000, there must be some little kind of like, oh yes, that's
Amount of channels I can get with it. You know, it's 32 channels in and out on a Dante card, and I've still got all the analog and AES and MADI if I want it, and you know, all of that is still there. You have this untapped plug-in like feel to the device in a way that you know, a stereo in out effects processor just doesn't have that, you know, that feel to it. You know, you use it like it's a black box. The great thing with the H9000 is how deep you can get into it.
Sure.
And you can also, you know, with a bit of time, I haven't quite got there yet, build your own plugins in a programming environment, not unlike Max MSP.
I'm sure there must be pretty much a few limitations on what you can get done with that thing. It's
a beast.
It's very you.
It's very me.
So how many instances can you pull up then via plugin?
A lot. You want to think of it like how many channels have you got? So I've got a Dante card in there. I've got eight analog in and out. I don't have the MADI card, but I could get it. So you've got it's in the other room, so I can't actually see the rear of it. AES, 8 channels, analog, I think 8 channels, and then I've got 32 channels of Dante. I could put a Digilink card in there for another 32 channels, I think, and then a MADI card, or I could have 3 Dante cards, and that would give me 96 channels.
And it would handle 96 discrete.
Well, it at the end of the day, it's you've got an amount of DSP. I'm nowhere close to understanding how much DSP I have. I just know that there's a shed load of it.
And you're not getting anywhere near the ceiling
soon. No, I've had you know, 16 channels of reverbs called up as instances in Pro Tools or a Logic.
And just if you need more than that, you really need to question things.
Yeah, you know, so as a device, and the great thing is how you can chain things in series and parallel, and you know, you can split things out to multiple places because it's all done digitally in a graphical environment called Emote. It's, you know, it's something else.
And I've just got to check. So your 16 reverbs, they're in series, right?
Yeah. No, that was just a test. I'm unlikely to use 16 reverbs in it. But the great thing is you don't feel limited in the way in which a lot of hardware devices, you know, you get what you get. This is, you get whatever you want.
Which I suppose is what I was saying about how you feel about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're running your hardware and it's doing what it needs to but you're maxing it out, but it's not falling over. It's a different feeling to knowing, yeah, I could do this another 12 times and it still wouldn't care.
It's the difference between being on a train, on a track, going to a known destination, or being on the ocean, going where the wind blows you. That's
so poetic. I love it. Steve, what about you?
So I'm just taking the easy way out here, but I really do mean it, is Pro Tools 2021.6.
Hey, we should talk about that.
Yeah, maybe we should. It's a home run.
So, go on, you've got to call out something specific there. So what's it going
to be? I am. So I'll call out two things specific. First is a philosophical, and that is just the whole shift of Avid to actually admit that there's more that they can be doing and to give it out to everybody. I see that as a great step for Avid. I see that as benefiting the whole community of Pro Tools users. And my as much as I complained, my specific feature that I'm loving is the additional IO/voice count. It takes most of the worry away of doing bigger projects. You'd say, well, I'm starting from a much more usable space for you know, I mean, maybe not for the bedroom producer who only needs 16 20 channels, but for if you're doing big projects, I mean, moving to 64 in out plus 2048 voices, I mean, I could complain about that, but I'd have a hard time maxing that out.
Sure, absolutely. Okay, well, mine is kind of simpler than that, but really, really useful, which is a good local repair guy. And I've found somebody who's 20 minutes from my house who can fix pretty much anything that humans can fix, if you see what I mean, as opposed to double-sided surface mount component, blah, 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 you know. But already used him for a couple of things. He fixed a monitor for me that wasn't powering up, and that was nice and quick. And I took over to him a power amplifier that's been dead literally for years, had a channel down. Actually both channels down, and admittedly it cost me £20 to find out, but he priced up the replacement power supply, and I found out that it was more than the amplifier was worth, and I left it with him for parts, frankly. But the point is, I can do that, and there's no finding packing materials and sending them to people or back to distributors where you got this.
Or driving 3 hours each way,
fix that stuff.
I've got a guy in London that I still go to from when I was living in London, and you know, I now live out in the sticks in Oxfordshire. It's a real pain. You know, if anyone knows anyone in Oxfordshire, please message me.
Exactly. But yeah, this is a rare find indeed, and yeah, I'm not going to post a link to who this guy is because he wouldn't thank me anyway. But no, very useful. Also, I mean, his bread and butter previously actually has been fixing guitar amps. And he's much more experienced and got wider experience than that. But this seemed to be where the work was, and that's what he's done most of. And interestingly, that work's pretty much dried up because guitarists aren't gigging, so they're not breaking their gear because of the pandemic, which is interesting.
Right.
It's an example of that kind of knock-on effect.
Also, people going to modelling amplifiers, you know, Line 6 pods and Helix and XFX and that sort of thing. I'm seeing far fewer real, in quotes, amplifiers, tube amplifiers.
But that hasn't suddenly happened in the last 2 years.
Those two things together for sure.
Interesting stuff. Although, you know, I mean, maybe they're seeing fewer terrible back injuries because people aren't trying to drag twin reverbs up staircases anymore, and instead they're carrying a pedal board.
It be that, or would be sitting at home, you know, eating cheesy chips in front of Netflix?
Absolutely. Yeah. Right, we digress, so we should probably wrap things up. But thanks to James Richmond and Steve DeMott sharing their thoughts on this big Pro Tools update. And come back next week for another edition of the Production Expert Podcast.